This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, April 27, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. Tonight was a fun episode of Dynamite. On the whole, top to bottom, I had a lot of fun watching this show tonight. They opened strong. They closed strong. I love that opening match. Tonight was the Owen Hart Cup qualifier between Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler for the first time ever and the only time ever. They have made it very clear in interviews all week long that this is the only time you will ever get to see the two members of FTR going one-on-one against each other. And if this is going to be their only match, I thought they went out there and they had a memorable one. This is a match that I think Bret Hart's going to be texting them. I'm sure he already has. I'm sure he's already sent them a very nice text message letting them know how proud he is of the two of them. But then to close out the show, we had a ladder match for the TNT Championship. Now, the last time we got a ladder match for the TNT title was in January. It was the last big match that Cody Rhodes had. In fact, I think it was the last match that Cody Rhodes had in an AEW ring. And it was a memorable match. That also was a fun match with a very memorable spot. Sammy hitting the cutter, leaping over the ladder, catching Cody, perfect timing on the way down. That spot back in January was done with picture-perfect precision. The exact opposite of what we got in the match tonight when Sammy Guevara went for everything and he got nothing on a Phoenix Splash early in the match against Scorpio Sky. He crashed and he burned and it was terrifying because it looked like he fell right on his fucking head. Somehow, he was able to continue. His brains weren't completely scrambled. And by the end of that match, it got really exciting, and I actually ended up really liking that match. I did not like watching him, you know, almost spill his fucking brains out all over the place, but I enjoyed the opening match. I enjoyed the majority of the final match. We had Wardlow. The Wardlow-MJF story continues, and Wardlow went out there tonight. Wardlow did things in the ring tonight against Lance Archer that someone like Wardlow should not be able to do. He went in there tonight. I thought he looked very impressive. It was more of the same that we've gotten from him and from this storyline. There was no big twist. We still have a month, 4 weeks until Double or Nothing. For them to get us to a point where MJF agrees to a match with Wardlow at the next pay-per-view, which clearly is where this is headed. And speaking of Double or Nothing, our main event is now official. CM Punk will challenge Hangman Adam Page for the AEW World Championship. Hangman was not on the show tonight. We'll talk about why. We'll talk about all the other goings-on on the show tonight, including the return of Rey Fénix, who is back after that gruesome injury back in January. It was only a few months ago. Last week, we learned about the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, and there were a lot of opinions going back and forth about that show. Oh my God, all the WWE loyalists who hate everything about AEW, they were losing their absolute ever-loving minds about this announcement. And I ran them down, and I ran everything down that you needed to hear on the podcast on Sunday. And it's up on YouTube. If you want to go listen to it, I gave you my full thoughts on the Forbidden Door stuff and all the bird brains who were chiming in with all some of the dumbest takes that I've seen in a very long time. But that was the big announcement coming out of last week's show. The stars of AEW one-on-one against the stars of New Japan Pro Wrestling. I bring that up because even though there was no movement on that front tonight, right now it's full steam ahead to Double or Nothing, so there were no new announcements on that front. But I mentioned that because next Wednesday on Dynamite, it looks like we're getting a little bit of a mini Impact Wrestling invasion. It looks like Impact, they felt left out. And so they're going to get in on the action next week. We got a couple of matches involving talents from Impact Wrestling on next week's show, so we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. I'll explain. Super chats are open. You will see. You already see them popping up right below me, right below me, right down there. They're going to pop right on your screen so you can see them. I'll read them. So send them on in. I threw some new ones in there for you as well, by the way. You might see some of those popping up as well. Quick plug here before we get into the review. If you are a YouTube channel member, and if you are not, I would encourage you to consider becoming one. regardless of which of the two tiers you are currently on, tomorrow night, Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, come back here to the YouTube channel. If you are a channel member, I'm going to be going live and opening up the phone lines. First time in several weeks. Better call Saul a Monster. You got questions, you better bring them. Because I'm opening up the phone lines and I'm going to hand the show over to you. So again, 8 p.m. tomorrow night. Hopefully I will see many of you there. Also, tomorrow, you guys are getting a lot of stuff tomorrow, because tomorrow at noon Eastern, it is My Rise Episode 4, WWE 2K22 My Rise. Sound off, gamer. Yes, I have been demoted to the main roster. I went from wrestling Johnny Gargano in one match to literally in the very next match being put in the ring with Andre the Giant. Thanks a lot, Bruce. This is going to be an episode you do not want to miss. So that is going to be posting tomorrow at noon Eastern, pushing out to the channel. So clear out over it. This one's long. This is the longest one I've ever done. It's almost an hour and 20 minutes. Brand new Sound Off Gamer coming your way tomorrow. So now let's get into the show tonight, because we got right into it with the perfect match, I thought, to open up the show. If I were formatting tonight's show, if I were booking tonight's show and I was coming up with the match order, this is exactly the match I would have opened the show with. It was, for the first time ever and the last time ever, Dax Harwood of FTR going one-on-one with his tag team partner. They are the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, the AAA Tag Team Champions. Dax Harwood against Cash Wheeler. CM Punk was on commentary for this. CM Punk was as excited as anybody to be here for this match. He may be the, I think of everybody in the on the AEW roster. If they were to compare who's the biggest Bret Hart fan, I think Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler would fight you if you approached them and said that you were a bigger Bret Hart fan than they were, but CM Punk is probably pretty close. So he was very excited to be on the call for this match. These two, as you might imagine, and I knew they were going to do this. I knew they were going to do this coming in. I could have predicted it. They followed the Bret and Owen playbook to a T. And if you've seen the Bret Hart-Owen Hart match at WrestleMania, if you haven't, I don't know what the hell you're waiting for. But if you've seen the Bret-Owen match that opened WrestleMania 10, another reason, by the way, why I thought it was very appropriate for this to be the opener, since they clearly modeled parts of this match off of the opener from WrestleMania 10, which is still the greatest opening match in WrestleMania history. You saw the spot here. They did the spot from WrestleMania where Owen scraped his boot. He wiped his boot on Bret's face, and Bret pointed up at him and said, "You better not do that again." They recreated the same spot here. Dax did the finger point. Dax gave Cash an accidental thumb to the eye at one point, which Cash was not too pleased about. That was the sign, the first sign of tension between the two partners here in this match. Dax hit a giant superplex and then went for a top rope headbutt, but Cash rolled out of the way. Wheeler followed with a low drop kick, then knocked Harwood off the apron, heading into the first picture-in-picture break of all the matches. Yeah, because sometimes they have opening segments and opening matches on the show that don't have an ad break. Of all the matches to throw in one of these picture-in-picture breaks, did it have to be this one? Really? Was that really necessary? I can point to at least one match on this show that didn't even have to be on the show. Right before the main event, it was a big 10, it was an 8-man tag. You could have cut that match and maybe given some of this stuff some more time. Maybe they could have avoided having to take a break here during this match. Come back from the break, and the two men had a midair collision coming off the ropes. We got a double down. Once they were back up, Wheeler went for the backslide. Harwood, though, kicked off the turnbuckles in the corner, a la Bret, against Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 8, or against Steve Austin at Survivor Series 96. He got a near fall. Dax hit a slingshot Liger bomb for a near fall of his own. Well, I mean, the same member of FTR. He got a second near fall. So they replicated the victory roll spot from the end of the WrestleMania 10 match with Bret and Owen, only this time Cash kicked out of it, and then he hit a stuffed pile driver to Harwood. Wheeler tried for a back suplex off the top rope. Dax reversed it in midair, landed on top of him for a very close near fall. About a minute later, Dax was coming off the ropes. He looked like he was going for a crossbody, and they collided. They fell out of the ring through the ropes. Wheeler was down outside selling a knee injury. He was holding his knee and, you know, claiming that his knee was hurt. So they made it back into the ring just in the nick of time. Right at the nine count, both men get back into the ring. Dax sees that Cash is favoring his knee, and he goes for the sharpshooter, but he hesitates. He has a moment of hesitation. It's like when Diesel showed mercy to Brett at Survivor Series in 95 when he was getting ready to finish him off with the powerbomb and Brett just collapsed in a heap. Even Mr. Perfect on commentary is watching this going, what's he waiting for? What happened? Brett rolled him up, got the pin, and won the championship. So that moment of hesitation nearly cost him the match. Cash pulled him in for the inside cradle. Got a two count. Dax, though, shifted his weight. And now he got a cradle of his own, and he got the 1-2-3. And you could tell looking at the fans in the first few rows, it caught them off guard. They were not expecting. I wasn't expecting that finish either, by the way. I was not expecting that finish either. Although I believe that was. Now, was that the finish to the. Oh, I should know this. It's one of my favorite matches. The King of the Ring 93 match with Mr. Perfect. It was a similar type of finish, actually. There was no sharpshooter. There was no kind of decisive win in that match. You know, Brett pulled one out over Perfect. And that was kind of the finish that we got here. Harwood picks up the win. A very good, very enjoyable opening match. A great wrestling match between two men who know each other very well. As they said on commentary, they've been tag team partners for over 600 matches. They've been doing this thing for a while now. They have had some tremendous matches together as partners. And tonight, if it is their only match against each other, I thought that this was an excellent match. They embraced when it was over. They were sitting next to each other on the ring apron. And you could see Cash Wheeler. Wheeler had a smile on his face. And you know that both of them, you know, even though you could see a smile on their face on the outside, you know these guys were smiling on the inside. They were very happy. You could tell they were very happy when this match was over. They put a lot of thought into this, and the match, you know, they pulled off the match, I think, the way that they wanted to. They should be proud of that match. And, you know, it would have been great in the tournament itself. Remember, this was just a qualifier. This could have been a first-round match, a quarterfinal match. We still have not seen any of the brackets for the men's or the women's tournaments. I guess until the qualifiers are all wrapped up, we're not going to see a bracket. So for a qualifying match, it was a hell of a qualifier. After the match, they made it official. For Double or Nothing in Las Vegas next month, it will be CM Punk challenging Hangman Adam Page for the AEW World Championship, which got a huge reaction when they put the graphic up on the screen and everybody saw it. There it was in living color. Everybody popped, and CM Punk, he requested a microphone. He stood up from the announce desk. He made his way down to the ring. Now, Hangman, like I mentioned before, Hangman was not on the show tonight. The two of them had a very brief face-to-face on the stage last week, and then Punk walked off. Earlier today, Hangman tweeted that he has COVID, and so he was not going to be able to be on the show tonight. Evidently, that caused some major rewriting of the show tonight. I don't know exactly what segments were changed or tweaked or added or what, but it did require some major rewrites to the show tonight. But they did the best they could with it. CM Punk had the microphone, and he, as he is making his way down to ringside, he starts cutting a promo. He did what he called a walk and talk. He said, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know you want to get right to the action. And the camera followed him, and he's staring right into the camera. As he's walking down to the ring, he was circling the ringside area. He said he's never been in a locker room with more talent than they have in AEW. He said when he returned to pro wrestling, he asked himself a very simple question. He asked himself, can I still do this? And the answer is, hell yes, I can still do this. He praised the fans. He said he could not have made it this far without them. One thing he cannot do is guarantee victory next month in Las Vegas. He said Hangman will know that he's been in a fight regardless of whether he wins or loses. He said he's going to continue to fight until the wheels fall off. This was good stuff. It was short. It was to the point. They made the best of a bad situation. I'm sure there would have been some kind of a face-to-face in the ring with these two. You know, nose-to-nose, and they weren't able to do that. So, they, like I said, they had to take a bad situation and turn it into something positive, and I think they did the best they could under the circumstances to get people pumped up for this match. They didn't have to do much. You know, like I said, when they put that graphic up on the screen, the people popped. To them, this is a major main event, and it is. Babyface against Babyface, two of the most popular stars in the entire company right now. And it's a fresh match that we haven't seen before. You know, CM Punk and Bryan Danielson both are working their way through the roster, working with different people. Danielson is working with as many of the young guys as he possibly can. We've seen Punk have the extended feud with MJF. You know, and he's also feuded with Eddie Kingston, and he's, you know, but we've seen him with Darby Allin, we've seen him with MJF, and they've largely protected him outside of that one loss to MJF on TV. And it's all been to culminate in this moment where Punk would eventually challenge for the world championship. And now here we are. They have 4 weeks until the pay-per-view. Still plenty of time. Well, in fact, we'll probably see Hangman on TV next week. Even if he wasn't back in time for next week. They have 4 weeks. So if they want to do a contract signing or they want to have some kind of a face-to-face, there's still plenty of time for them to get these two face-to-face, nose-to-nose together on TV. But you look at that match, now that we know it's official. Punk against Hangman. We have the Forbidden Door show already announced for June 26th in Chicago, in Punk's hometown. So we know that CM Punk is going to be on that show. We know he's going to play an integral part of that show, if not in the main event. I don't see how Punk isn't in the main event. He's already one of the biggest names in the company, but you're in Chicago. Punk against Okada just seems like the match to do. They've already teased it. So we could be in a situation here where Punk wins the championship in Las Vegas. He goes into Chicago as the champion. Okada is the IWGP champion for now, assuming he can hold on to the title through the end of June. And we could have a champion against champion match, not for any titles, but that would be a huge main event for them to do on that show. And on the podcast on Sunday, I floated another potential main event if they don't want to do Punk and Hangman, or Punk and Okada, rather, for some reason, because there's always the chance Punk does not win the title in Las Vegas. And instead, they hold off, they do a rematch between them in Chicago if they want Punk to win the title in his hometown and get the biggest possible babyface reaction that he could get. You blow the roof off the United Center by having CM Punk win his first world championship in what, 10 years? Right? I mean, the last time we saw him as a world champion, he lost the WWE title to The Rock at the Royal Rumble. That was at the very beginning of 2013. So you're talking a decade. It's a long time. And we know there's going to be some matches on that Forbidden Door show that are only AEW, that are only New Japan exclusive. Tony Khan has said that. It's not a case where every single match on the show will be interpromotional. I don't know that they're going to do that. In fact, I don't think they will, but there's always the possibility because it is Chicago, and if they want the title change there, they can do it there. The idea that I floated is if you involve Punk in anything else, you could do a tag team match in the main event. You could. The idea that I floated was you do Okada and Tanahashi, who teamed up in the main event of that New Japan against Noah show back in January. You do the two of them against the Blackpool Combat Club. Moxley and Danielson. Because I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of tag team matches on that show. But the Punk stuff, everything is playing out exactly the way that I figured it would, and the way that I predicted it would, and the way that it should. Remember what I talked about months ago, before this even looked like a possibility. Remember what I pitched and I talked about? We went over it on the streams here. Months ago, when MJF got that win over CM Punk on TV, and then Punk came back and got the win over MJF at Revolution. 1-1. The issue between them is not over. They're just taking a hiatus for now. the way this story works and ultimately gets MJF over in the biggest possible way when all is said and done is when MJF ultimately wins the AEW World Championship, the man that he beats to become champion for the first time is CM Punk. They've had two matches. They're one apiece. Punk wins the title, whether it's next month, whether it's in June. And then at some point down the road, whether it's All Out, whether it's Full Gear, maybe it's Revolution next year. They wait a whole year. They come back to it, whatever. MJF is the one to take the title from CM Punk. For CM Punk to be the man that he beats would be the perfect end to the story arc between the two of them. And everything is set up right now perfectly for that, assuming that Punk wins the championship. Punk has to win the title in order to make that story arc work. So I like where this is headed. That's why I pitched it. And anyway, this promo was very good. Speaking of the Blackpool Combat Club, they were up next. You welcome all my usual suspects. I see all the green names in the chat. If you have a green name in the chat, that means that you are a channel member, like Toondar and Food Hive and Ian Israel and Temjin. I want to welcome all of you joining live here on the stream tonight. You guys are awesome. Hopefully you can join for the call-in show tomorrow night. Happy birthday. Is it Food Hive's birthday? Everyone is saying happy birthday, Food Hive. Holy crap. I believe it is. I believe our boy Food Hive is celebrating a birthday tonight. So everybody wish him a happy birthday. So we had the Blackpool Combat Club, Brian Danielson, Wheeler Yuta, and John Moxley against QT Marshall, Aaron Solo, and Caveman Camarado representing the Nightmare Factory. Yuta got a huge reaction coming out, and at first I didn't know why. I said, I understand that they've been focusing on him on television now for many, many weeks, but he's not that over. What's going on here? I didn't realize that he's from Philadelphia, which is where they were tonight. So then it made sense. But at first, when I hear that reaction, I'm thinking, holy shit, this guy's really getting over. Then I realize they say, you know, from Philadelphia. So he got a very nice hometown reaction. JR, by the way, still out there calling him Daniel Bryan. God bless him. He'll never shake it. He'll never shake it. So the Blackpool Combat Club dominated from the start. Camarado, though, took down Wheeler Yuta with a back body drop. And that allowed the Factory to take control through the commercial break. Back from the break, it was a German suplex by Yuta that allowed him to get to Danielson for the hot tag. And Danielson went to work on Aaron Solo, took out the other Factory members with a dive. QT Marshall broke up a lapel lock attempt. Moxley planted QT with a half and half suplex, clotheslined him out of the ring. Danielson cut off an Aaron Solo dive with a drop kick. So it came down to Yuta and Camarado. They tagged in. Camarado was tossing him around. Yuta finally surprised him with a guillotine and a sleeper, and Yuta laid in the elbows before winning the match for his team with his seatbelt pinning combination. I don't know how he does this move, but it's effective. And at the same time that he was raining down elbows on Camarado, you had Danielson, you had Moxley executing their own stereo submission holds. And Yuta wins it for his team. So Yuta came across like a star in this match because of the hometown reaction that he got. And again, they put the shine on him by allowing him to go over and get the win for the team, which is something we've seen them do before. You know, that was the whole point of this arrangement. One of the reasons why I wanted to see Moxley and Danielson come together and follow through on this, you know, this promise, you know, on the show that, you know, they might take some young talent under their wing. He's getting the rub from them right now. Danielson and Moxley are two of the biggest stars in the company. These are two men who have been world champion elsewhere. Moxley has been world champion in this company. He's been a star, one of the top stars, from the moment he walked into AEW. Wheeler Yuta hanging with them, being seen with them, fighting alongside them, winning matches for them, is only going to help Wheeler Yuta. Can Yuta get over at a level where one day he can be a main event level star? I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody can predict these things. AEW clearly sees things in certain talents that they've... Daniel Garcia is another great example. You can tell based on the amount of television time they get that Tony Khan sees a lot in some of these younger guys. Wheeler Yuta is one of those guys. How these guys are going to end up 5 years from now, 3 years from now, nobody can be sure. But they're giving him every opportunity to get over as a major star. And tonight he came across like a big deal. Tony Schiavone was in the back again, as he was last week. I think it was Friday. He was in the back with Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Toni Storm, all of whom have qualified for the Women's Owen Hart Foundation Tournament. They've all qualified, not Tony. Tony hasn't qualified. Although, for all the work they have him doing in this company, you may as well give him a spot. Tony Schiavone has earned it. For all the work and the running back and forth and all the stuff they have him doing, put him in the Owen. I'm sure they could carve out a spot for Tony Schiavone. You can give him a bye into the next round. He's earned it. Baker and Hayter were insulting Storm. Tony introduced a friend of hers, and in walked Ruby Soho. Holy shit, when was the last time we saw Ruby Soho on Dynamite? I can't remember the last time I saw her on Rampage. It's been several weeks, at least. We have not seen her on Dynamite in a while. She said Owen Hart once said, enough is enough, and it's time for a change. She's ready to drop both of them right here and now. Britt Baker turned her down and said, Britt Baker did not say, fuck Bully Ray. But Stephen Chappa did. Thank you for the $30 super chat, my friend. It did make it kind of sound like Britt Baker said that. But Britt Baker said that they have stuff to do. They're going to go visit Ruby's home in catering. It's funny because it's true. Dry Chicken says that she's been on Dark. Yeah, she has been. Those are the matches that she's been wrestling. She's been wrestling Dark matches. For many weeks. That's my point. We haven't seen her on Dynamite in a while. I'm telling you, the timing on some of your super chats, you could not script that any better. The timing is just impeccable. I love it. So then we had a backstage segment with Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Christian Cage. Jungle Boy said losing to Kyle O'Reilly really hurt, but he didn't want to sound like a sore loser. Christian said that Jungle Boy didn't sound like a sore loser. He just sounded like a loser. And the crowd reacted, but then Christian said that he'll bounce back. He challenged any top five ranked team in the company to step up. In walks Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. And they accepted their challenge. So they haven't announced when that match will be taking place, but obviously that's going to be coming up soon. We had Wardlow one-on-one with Lance Archer. We had ourselves a good old-fashioned hoss battle. Good old-fashioned hoss fight here on this show. MJF and Sean Spears were up in one of the skyboxes. They were eating popcorn. MJF asked Spears, what do women in Philadelphia use for birth control? And as responses go, this was actually one of the more tame things I think MJF could have said. He said their personality. I thought he was going to say something far worse than that. Wardlow again came out to no music like last week. He was escorted to the ring in handcuffs by security. As they were taking their time uncuffing him at ringside, Archer dove from out of nowhere off the apron with a cannonball, took everybody out. In the ring, Wardlow hits a standing, twisting Hurricanrana on Archer and takes him over. And I'm sitting here thinking, holy shit, that's not what I was expecting from Wardlow. Wardlow was setting up for the Powerbomb Symphony. Archer escaped, tried for a choke slam. Wardlow powered out of his grip. And both guys went down with double clotheslines. About a moment later, Archer went old school, like The Undertaker. He was walking the top rope, hit a moonsault off the rope. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Was that, and I could be wrong, and maybe it was another move, was that the spot where Archer hurt his neck last year. Because I know he landed horribly, and I don't remember if it was doing the moonsault off the top rope on that spot, or maybe it was some other kind of dive. I thought maybe it was that spot when he landed on his head. And he missed some time. He's lucky he didn't break his neck. So, because you worry, you know, a guy that big, he's got to get the full rotation. He got the full rotation here. He hit the moonsault. Followed that up with a choke slam, but only got two. Archer perched Wardlow on the top rope, grabbed him for the blackout, and he hit it. He hit his finish. He connected with the blackout. But when he went for the pin, Wardlow crucifixed him over. Archer kicked out, though. Archer set him up for a second blackout. He put him on the ropes and tried to go for number two. Wardlow fought him off, hit a top rope senton. He nearly missed Archer. He almost completely cleared him. That's how much distance Wardlow got on this senton. This is like one of those old school Jeff Hardy swanton bombs where Jeff would mostly miss the guy, like part of his head would hit the guy's arm. That's basically what happened here. Then came the power bomb. Down goes Archer, then a second powerbomb, then a third powerbomb. Finally, the fourth powerbomb finished him off and put Lance Archer away. He didn't just put Lance Archer away. He put away pretty much whatever credibility Archer had left as an opponent. I mean, look, the right man went over here. I don't think there was ever any doubt about how this was going to go, you know, barring any run-in by MJF. It was going to be a win for Wardlow. We just didn't know how or how clean it would be. This was as clean could be. This is not about Lance Archer. This was not about Archer. This was entirely about Wardlow and getting him over and prepping him for the eventual match with MJF. But the problem with Archer is that he winds up on the losing end of every single big match. I understand he's on Dark and he's mowing down, you know, Joe Schmo number one and, you know, Harry Sack number two and all these different job guys that he's wrestling every week. But every time he's in a match of any significance against Dustin Rhodes, right? Didn't he? I thought he lost that match too. I think he lost that match. But Hangman Page, all these matches that we've seen him in that are either for a championship or it's some kind of a big, you know, payoff, he loses. When it counts, in a big match, Lance Archer loses. That's pretty much been his role now for a while in AEW. And so he's there to serve a purpose. He's not meant to be the focal point of the show. He is there to serve a purpose, plain and simple. He's like now, he's the Finn Balor of AEW. Or maybe Finn Balor is the Lance Archer of WWE. Maybe that would be a more appropriate thing to say. After the match, they cuffed Wardlow, led him to the back, and that was it. But we got a fucking Rana and a top rope senton out of this man. He can do it all. He can work, he can talk. And frankly, I think it's about time. Because whenever we hear people, and I hear people talking about the young stars of AEW, and look, we can talk about them. We can talk about how MJF is on that list. We could talk about him. We could talk about Darby Allin. We could talk about Sammy Guevara. We could talk about Jungle Boy. I think it's time that we start acknowledging Wardlow as one of the young pillars of AEW. He has said that he's very happy in AEW and he doesn't have any intention of leaving. Of course, everybody says that. Forever is a long time. But he's tried and true, you know, AEW. They gave him an opportunity. He's taken advantage of it. He's getting over. He's becoming a bigger and bigger star with each passing week. He's got the talent. He's got the crowd behind him. He has all the tools as much as any of those guys do. Maybe he can't do as many flips and dives as they can, but so what? I think he needs to be in that same conversation. If anything, he maybe has a better chance than they do because he's got something they don't. He's got size. Size is not the end-all be-all. Size is not everything like it used to be many years ago, but it is still very important. That's not something that Darby Allin has. That's not something that Sammy really doesn't even have it. Jungle Boy doesn't, but Wardlow does. And he's out there doing fucking Ranas and Sentons. So I think it's about time we start naming him when we have these conversations. We have the Jericho Appreciation Society out next for a sit-down. I couldn't remember if I was watching AEW or if I was watching NXT 2.0 here with Tony D'Angelo, the Don of NXT. All these sit downs. So we had a sit down with the Jericho group, Eddie Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. Jeff Parker of 2.0 said that both groups have agreed no violence. They've told Tony Khan there will be no physicality between them or else there'll be a price to pay. Kingston comes out with LAX. They make their way down to the ring. Jericho says that we are lucky enough to be living in the Jericho era. And these three men deprived Pittsburgh last week of Jericho and his group when they were barred from the building, if you remember, on Rampage. They paid to see Jericho. That was taken away from them, and therefore he was demanding an apology. He wanted an apology from these men. Ortiz said that he's got something better than an apology, and he was fiddling around in his pocket, and he goes, oh, it's in here somewhere. And of course, he pulls out his middle finger. And Santana says he's got something for him as well. It's in his wallet, and he goes, and he pulls out a middle finger. Daniel Garcia starts yapping on. He's talking about these threats don't mean a thing. It's not like you guys can hit us. You can't lay a finger on us. And Garcia got in their face. He came across actually great here because he was supposed to be the little punk kid whose face you just want to fucking smack. So I thought he did a good job with it here. Kingston says, enough. That's it. Stop. He goes, I hate this. I hate this sports entertainment crap. He tells Jericho a while ago, you know, I told you guys before, we're going to get you no matter what. He told Jericho to stop with the crap, wanted a fight. He goes, I don't care if it's 5-on-3 because they're outnumbered. It's Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. There's three of them. There's five of the other guys. He goes, he doesn't care. Jericho says the problem is that it is 5-on-3. They're not smart enough to realize it, so the Jericho Appreciation Society will take them out one by one. He's going to put a hit on all of them. I think I am watching NXT 2.0. I'm going to watch the show next week. There's going to be a dead fish on their car. Like Legado del Fantasma last week. Kingston asked Jericho if he really knows what that means. Do you know what a hit means? Do you know what you're even saying? He says, when you say a hit in his world, that means you end things. And he smacked the mic out of Jericho's hand. Jericho had to be handed another microphone. Said, no company wants Eddie Kingston. This is your last chance. Stand there, shut your mouth, do what you're told. And he's goading him. You know, what are you going to do? You going to hit me? Jericho's sitting there. He's got a smug look on his face. Kingston says to Jericho, I can smell the fear. I can smell the fear. He goes, when you say a hit, you better be prepared to put somebody in the ground. Are you ready to do that? He goes, nah. And he walked off. Jericho, the whole time as Kingston was leaning in right in his face, had this, his eyes were all big and he had this, you know, terrified look on his face. Eddie Kingston's intensity is off the charts. I mean, it's his best work. It's not his work in the ring. It's the work that he does on the mic because he makes you believe that he believes what he's saying. That is the art of what Eddie Kingston can bring to professional wrestling. And so he was balls to the wall, right up in Jericho's face, veins popping out of the side of his neck. The intensity here was off the charts. The thing is, you know, you start talking about hits. You start talking about putting you in the ground. There's, you know, we're going to put you in the ground. And you know that they're not going to, you know, it just comes across like a bunch of empty words. Unless, of course, we're going to get a buried alive match. And then in that case, somebody will literally be put in the ground. I don't expect that. But I did think that Eddie came off well here. And Daniel Garcia came across as the perfect little prick. So to that end, I thought the segment served a purpose. We had Hikaru Shida one-on-one with Serena Deeb in a Philadelphia street fight. This was match number 5, we were told, in their rivalry, which has gone through a lot of starts and stops. I thought they had a good match. Not a great match, but they had a good match. The crowd in Philadelphia didn't seem to care all that much. They were reacting like, you know, almost like polite reaction to the match. They weren't into it. And I do wonder if that has a lot to do with it. The fact that this feud has been going on for months and months, and yet we don't get to see these two very often on television. And this is one of the problems that you run into when you have so many people that you have to cycle in and out on these shows. And I know Shida went back to Japan for a little bit, but she wasn't there very long. I thought she was going to be there for a while. And she actually wasn't there very long. She went, I forgot what it was. She went to go do some kind of performance. I don't know if it was theater or what it was. But she's been back now for a while. But the start and the stop and the start and the stop to the point where I think it was the third or fourth match they had. It was like, I had completely forgotten about them. It was like 1 week they mentioned Shida and Deeb and I go, oh, I forgot they were even feuding. Because they were rarely being featured on television, and yet the program still continues. And so they came into this tonight cold. This is a cold program. This is not a hot program. It is a cold program. So I actually don't blame the crowd. I can understand why the crowd wouldn't have been all that into it. I get it. Dee brought a chair into the match. She picked up Shida and dropped her knee first onto the chair. Shida has, of course, the storyline knee injury. It went to a picture-in-picture. Deeb sprayed a fire extinguisher at Shida coming out of the break, worked her over with a kendo stick. Shida picked up the kendo stick, and she was acting like she was blinded by the fire extinguisher. She was swinging wildly around. Went to ringside, got water from a security guard to wash out her eyes. Shida came back and hit an avalanche falcon arrow off the middle rope. Got a two count only. But she came back, and she whipped the shit out of Deeb, right across the midsection with that kendo stick. And then she was using it to choke her. Serena hit the Deeb tox flat onto a chair. Shida kicked out. Serena applied the serenity lock. Shida got to the ropes, but Excalibur pointed out no rope breaks in a street fight. So she worked over Sheeta's injured knee a little bit more. She was ramming it repeatedly down onto the chair. She applied a Texas cloverleaf, and eventually Shida had no choice but to tap out. She was right in the middle of the ring, she was selling the knee, and she tapped out. Serena Deeb picks up the win. Serena had, I don't know if you noticed, when they zoomed in on her face, when the referee raised her hand after the match, she had a nasty mouse right under her eye. So they show Thunder Rosa, the AEW Women's Champion, watching the finish of this match on a monitor in the back. They cut to her briefly, and so there it is. Nothing's official yet, but they're teasing that's going to be the women's title match at Double or Nothing. It's the match that I said I was hoping they would do. After she vanquished Britt Baker, and then they put her in the program with Nyla Rose, and I was happy that that was, you know, not dragged out to the next pay-per-view. I said the next challenger for Thunder Rosa should be Serena Deeb, and it looks like that's where we're headed. That's going to be a great match. Thunder Rosa against Serena Deeb is going to be a hell of a match at Double or Nothing. We went to the back. MJF and Sean Spears were being interviewed by Lexi Nair. Not for long, though. MJF kicked her out. And MJF dialed somebody on his phone. We couldn't hear who it was. He didn't tell us who it was. But he asked the big man if he would like to make six figures next week, and the man on the other end of the line agreed. That was the extent of the entire conversation. MJF then told us that he's got an opponent in mind for Wardlow who is smarter than him, who's actually taller than he is, and then he ended the promo by saying, and you can't teach that. I mean, I don't think they can make it any more clear who he's talking about. So, good old W. Morrissey from Impact Wrestling is on his way to AEW, the former Big Cass, being brought in for what I assume is going to be a one-shot next week on Dynamite. I have not been paying close attention to Impact. I am aware that he has been working there for a while now, and he's been putting in, from what I understand, some good work. I've seen a little bit of what he's done at Impact over the last few months. I actually watched the promo segment on TV. It was probably a few weeks ago. I think it was on Impact that he was cutting a promo, and it was a very serious promo because, you know, he's he's had issues with alcohol addiction, and he's been through rehab. He's been to hell and back. And it was, you know, a very heartfelt promo, and he was getting emotional and talking about, you know, his comeback and being clean and all that. So, you know, it's nice to hear that. You know, sometimes people have to hit rock bottom before they can climb out of the hole. Sounds like that's what happened to him. He actually had a great interview with Chris Van Vliet last year. It was a while ago. But it was a really good interview. And he was very open and honest about the problems that he's had. And I remember he was at that one indie show. It might have been a Tommy Dreamer House of Hardcore show. And he had the seizure. It might have been during a meet and greet. I don't remember exactly the circumstances, but he had a seizure in front of people, in front of fans, and it was very scary. And there was one person who recorded it, I think, why would you do that? And he had to be taken away in an ambulance. I mean, this guy, when I say he hit rock bottom, he hit rock bottom. And from what I understand, he's been doing some pretty good work over at Impact. And he looks like he's gotten himself into the best shape of his life. So they're going to bring him in, clearly, to TV next week to challenge Wardlow. I do think it's a little weird because you got Wardlow in the ring with Lance Archer tonight. And Lance Archer is, or looked to be, a little bit taller than Wardlow. He's at least the same size, if not slightly taller than Wardlow. Now you're going to bring in Morrissey next week, who physically is even bigger than Wardlow, just like, kind of like Archer, but probably even bigger. You know, it is a little, it's a little weird. You know, putting Wardlow in all these matches against guys that are bigger than him, just in terms of the visual. I mean, I get it, you know, because he's going to beat him. So he's mowing down big guys and, you know, again, he's beating all these people so he can get to the match with MJF, who's not as big as these other people. I guess that's what's kind of a little weird about it, I guess. But, yeah, so he'll be getting, that's going to be his first major, I guess that's his first appearance ever on an AEW show next week. Wonder if he'll have his little buddy with him. Wouldn't that get people talking? What's he been up to lately? So the next segment, on to the next. They try to cram as much shit in these shows, Tony Khan does, as he possibly can. Lights are out. When they turn on, we see Fuego del Sol is laid out on stage. And we hear Malakai Black. He hears his voice, and he comes walking out from the darkness, and he kneels down over Del Sol, says that he picked a fight with the wrong three men. Brody King and Buddy Matthews come out as well, and they're about to remove Fuego's mask. And before they can do that, we hear the voice of Alex Abrahantes over the PA system. And then in the ring, we see someone who is, I guess, supposed to be Alex. He's cloaked. He's got a hood on. We can't see his face. We can't see who it is, but we hear the voice. We see the guy in the ring. We're supposed to believe that it's Alex. Alex is cutting a promo. He's talking about how wrong it is to take a luchador's mask. He said they have been waiting to blindside the House of Black. Out comes Penta. Penta Oscuro comes walking out from the entranceway, because now the House of Black is in the ring. They had gotten into the ring. They had surrounded this hooded figure. And now here comes Penta. And then we hear the music for Pac, another one who we don't get to see very often on television. Out comes Pac. And Alex walks out behind them. And now the crowd, that gets a rise out of the crowd, because now they can see where this is going. And in the ring, while the House of Black has their backs turned, we see Rey Fénix. Pulls down the hood. He reveals that it was him in the ring the entire time. And this is the first time that we've seen Rey Fénix back on TV since January. Wasn't it that January 5th? I think it might have been the first Dynamite of the year. When the Lucha Bros, I believe that was the night that Jurassic Express won the tag team titles, I believe, from the Lucha Bros. And so, eventually, House of Black, they turn around. Fénix has a golden shovel, and he swings it. Buddy Matthews is in there. They struggle back and forth. Fénix hits a move on him. All three members of Death Triangle are in the ring. They do stereo dives out onto the members of the House of Black. And that's how they end the segment. It's great to see Phoenix back. He's got, had his arm wrapped up, but, you know, he was hitting moves in the ring like he's 100%. No big deal for him. It's a miracle. It is a miracle that he was not injured more severely than he was. The fact that he's even back now blows my mind, because that was in the moment. I mean, now we know that it wasn't a break. It wasn't as serious as it could have been. But in the moment, that is one of the most gruesome injuries that I have ever seen. You know, I think a lot of people think about the Sid Vicious leg snap in WCW, but this is up there with it. I mean, this was a fucking nasty injury. So even though it's been a few months, the fact that he's even back now is shocking to me. But it's good to see him back. And Death Triangle against House of Black, you know, that's going to be a hot match. I am looking forward to that. I still have big problems with the way, though, that they have been using or not using Malakai Black. I know they try to stick House of Black promos into some of the shows, even when they're not there live. And they're very brief. You know, they're dark, and they're very brief, and then they just kind of move on to the next thing. But you could go a few weeks. You know, maybe they'll throw something on an episode of Rampage, but, you know, there's just not a lot going on there. Malakai is one of those guys who needs to be featured more often. I mean, they need to find a way to get him on television more, and by extension, the entire group, on television more often. Because how can people be expected to take this group as any sort of a serious threat if we barely get to see them on TV? This is one of the problems that you run into when you have so many people and you have to find a way to cycle them in and out and find a role for them and find a way to feature them. You're not going to be able to do it every week, but they have to find a way to get him on television more often. The House of Black could be a major act in this company, and it's not. And Malakai in particular, one of my great fears is that by him being part of this group, he just sort of fades into the background. And that's what's happened. I'd like to see him on television more often. I know that he can be doing more than what they have him doing right now. We had Adam Cole, Red Dragon, and the Young Bucks against Dante Martin, Lee Johnson, Brock Anderson, and the Varsity Blondes. Excalibur sent well wishes to Darius Martin. He confirmed what I talked about on the Rampage stream on Friday night, that he is in fact out with another injury. He didn't say what the injury was. He didn't say how it happened. Darius went on Twitter after the report came out late last week and basically said that it wasn't a wrestling-related injury. So make of that what you will, but he is hurt. And apparently it's serious enough that he's going to be out for a while, which sucks. He was out for a year. He tore his ACL. He missed an entire year of his career. Just came back, had, I think, a total of 11 matches between AEW and maybe some independent shots, and now he's out hurt again. Hopefully not for another year, but we don't know. So, Darius is back on his own again. The Undisputed Elite, they attacked right at the bell, and they took turns beating down their opponents. See, the problem with a match like this, I mean, it's nice for them to want to get people like Lee Johnson and, you know, people like Dante Martin on the show. Yeah, that's great and all, but there was never any doubt about how this match was going to go. And it just felt very rushed. And so when you have guys like the Bucks are in there and Darius Martin, all you're seeing is guys flying. I know people are going to say, well, that's every Young Bucks match, which is not exactly true. I mean, the Young Bucks, you have people who say the Young Bucks, all they do is flip and dive, and there's no story, and those people can't be taken seriously. If you honestly believe that the Young Bucks have never told a story and they don't know how to tell a story, then you've never really watched the Young Bucks. You've seen some of their moves, and you know you have a preconceived notion. You don't like them. That's fine. You don't have to like them. Here, there was no story. This was just a match for the sake of throwing them out there. It felt rushed. This didn't have to be on the show. So I didn't like this at all. I was not a fan of this match at all. Of course, they got the win in the end. There was a four-way BTE trigger, which then led to Adam Cole hitting the boom. I think it was on Lee Johnson. He got the win. This was this was probably my least favorite thing on the entire show. I did not like this. They cut backstage. Something's going on in the back. Quick, we must go to the back. We go to the back and we see that the Jericho Appreciation Society has beaten down Eddie Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. I guess they broke the truce. I mean, does that not mean that they're going to get in some trouble now? I thought they weren't allowed to hit each other. What's going on here? This ended with Jericho throwing a fireball in Eddie Kingston's face as he was being held by Jake Hager and Daniel Garcia. So, I mean, the fireball, it's one of the oldest of old school wrestling angles. I mean, there have been tons of people. Jerry Lawler, of course, I mean, he did the fireball gimmick. You know, I mean, Jim Cornette's talked about the time he threw a fireball in. Who did he throw a fireball? Whose face did he throw a fireball in? I'm trying to remember. I don't think it wasn't Tracy Smothers. It was, oh gosh, Tommy Rich? It might have been Tommy Rich. But the fireball, of course, we all remember Hulk Hogan's botched fireball attempt in his match with the Ultimate Warrior at Halloween Havoc. So the fireball is as old as the, as old of a gimmick in wrestling as you'll find. Main event was Sammy Guevara against Scorpio Sky. It was a ladder match for the TNT Championship here on TBS. I love it. We have Jade Cargill defending the TBS title on TNT on Rampage Friday. And now we have the TNT title being defended on TBS. Makes no sense. Ronnie Garvin. Okay, I got Ronnie Garvin and Tommy Rich mixed up. That's right. It was Ronnie Garvin. But the ladder match here was the main event. Scorpio Sky attacked before the bell, sent Sammy into the barricade. Of course, before anything, when Sammy first came out, he was swapping spit with Ty Conti up on stage. Scorpio Sky was the biggest babyface in this match. There could be no debate about who was the babyface and who was the heel, according to this crowd in Philadelphia in this match. The heel was Sammy, the babyface was Scorpio Sky. They made that very clear. So Sky had control early on. Guevara came back with a released German suplex on the ramp, set up a ladder in the ring. The two were jockeying for position. Sammy climbed the ladder, but he was too far away from the belt. The title was not within reach. He was looking at it. He was trying to reach for it. And he realized that he was too far away from the title. Now, a normal person would simply climb back down and reposition the ladder. But this is Sammy Guevara, and the man is a moron. So what does he do? What does Sammy, you always see him go like this, right? What does Sammy Guevara do? Sammy decides to opt instead for a Phoenix Splash off the, now he wasn't on the tippy top of the ladder, but he was pretty high up there on one of the rungs. And he goes to hit a Phoenix Splash that completely missed Scorpio Sky. Not only did he miss Scorpio Sky, he crashed and burned and landed right on his fucking head. Just splat. Right on the mat. And he looked like he was seeing stars. This was terrifying. And at that moment, they happened to be getting ready to go into the final break. So they were going into the final picture-in-picture. But you can see multiple referees during the break were checking on Sammy. They took him out of the ring. He didn't do anything during this break. I usually don't even pay attention to what's going on during the picture-in-picture. I use it to catch up on my notes. But I'm watching this to see, make sure this guy is moving, that he's conscious, that he's aware of his surroundings. The referees had him on the outside. They're checking on him, but there was nothing, no offensive maneuver, nothing from him during the break. They were stalling. They were checking on him to make sure that he was okay. And he looked like he was okay. It was very, very scary. It's a very, very stupid move on his part. I mean, I've seen Sammy Guevara do some stupid things in matches, but this one was one of the more stupider. I was trying to come up with a better word for it. One of the dumber things that I have seen this guy attempt was that Phoenix Splash. Look, if you're going to do this, if you're going to try these crazy-ass unnecessary moves, you got to make sure you hit it. You got to make sure you hit it. Otherwise, you're going to get hurt and or it's going to look like shit. And so it looked like shit, and he almost killed himself. Risk and reward. You know, it's weird, just to stay on this for a second. We talk about Darby Allin a lot, and I love Darby Allin the way that he just rockets himself right out of the ring, right? It looks great. Darby Allin is a crazy man because Darby Allin does not care. He'll do things that just make you scratch your head and go, what is he thinking? Does he have a death wish? We've seen him get dragged behind cars. We've seen him get thrown hard down a concrete flight of stairs. We've seen him take some insane bumps during matches. And yet, when I watch Darby Allin, I never really get the sense that he's not in control of his body. If that makes sense. I know it sounds weird, but I don't worry as much when I watch a Darby Allin match as I do when I watch a Sammy Guevara match, because Sammy he's just wild. He'll just do stuff to see if he can do it. And there's such a small margin for error with the things that he does. He's also doing things that are a lot crazier than Darby in terms of the flips and the dives and the Phoenix Splash and the 450 and the 630 and all the stuff that you see him doing. I mean, think about the moves that he does. It's a lot more dangerous and crazier than what we see Darby Allin doing. But I never worry about that with Darby. Not that I don't worry, but I feel like, okay, he knows what he's doing. He's in control of his body and where he's going to land, and it's going to suck and it's going to hurt. But it's the complete opposite of how I feel when I watch a Sammy Guevara match, where I almost just want to look away. It's weird. They're both out of their minds, but just in very different ways, if that makes sense. Sammy got back into the match, set up a second ladder in the corner, and he tried for... Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, actually. James in the chat, that's a very good way of putting it. Controlled recklessness against just recklessness. That's how I describe the difference between Darby and Sammy. One is controlled recklessness. The other one is just being fucking reckless. It's actually a great way of putting it. Sammy set up a second ladder in the corner, tried for the same move that he used on Cody Rhodes, that amazing spot in their ladder match back in January when he hit that picture-perfect cutter where he dove over one ladder, caught Cody in midair. Cody did his part. He landed flat. It looked great. He went for the same spot here, but this time Scorpio Sky caught him for a cutter on the way down. Sky went and pulled out a ladder from under the ring that was wrapped in barbed wire. That got loud ECW chants. Here we are now. ECW has been dead for over 20 years. Not counting whatever the hell WWE tried to do with it years later. The spirit of ECW continues to live on here in Philadelphia. Sammy countered whatever Sky was going for, and he hit a standing Spanish fly onto the ladder, and Scorpio Sky landed right on the barbed wire. Dan Lambert climbs into the ring for the distraction, and Sammy grabs a hold of him, but Ty Conti gets into the ring, and Lambert turns around, and Ty kicks him right in the nuts, and she's celebrating. She's so happy about what she's done here. Here comes Paige VanZant. And the crowd comes alive. The crowd wanted to see this. Of course. Two hot women who were brawling and rolling around in the ring. What guy in the audience wouldn't want to see that? So here comes Paige VanZant. And she comes down to the ring and they start brawling. And Paige gets the better of it. She was throwing the punches that she was throwing. It reminded me a little bit of some of those awful punches that we've seen the awful pulled punches that we've seen Ronda Rousey throw on TV. This did not look all that good. But they're brawling at the same time we see Sammy brawling right next to them. Sammy brawling with Scorpio Sky. Ty came back. She took down Paige VanZant with a pump kick, and then she made out with Sammy. The two of them left the ring, Sammy and Ty, and they grabbed the barbed wire ladder, which I guess got knocked out of the ring. I didn't even notice. And they brought it back inside. They propped it up, Sammy did, against the ropes. Sky hit a leaping flatliner, though, to buy himself some time to recover. Scorpio Sky went to climb one of the regular ladders when Ty Conti jumped on his back. And Sammy went to go climb the same ladder on the other side, Paige Van Zandt jumped on his back. And so now we have both guys climbing the ladder with the women on their backs. Eventually, they shook them off. Shook them off like fucking fleas. And down they went. Two women ended up taking each other out with kicks at the same time. So that took care of Ty and Paige. Sammy knocked Scorpio Sky off the ladder, but Sky recovered quickly. Now, this was weird because Sammy knocked him off, and he had the match won, but he was taking his time. So he gave Scorpio Sky time to recover, and he tipped the ladder over. That sent Sammy tumbling backwards, back first, right into the barbed wire, right onto the ladder that was propped up against the ropes. Crowd came alive for Scorpio Sky. Scorpio Sky, of all people. Dan Lambert's guy. They came alive for this guy. You would think he was one of the top three baby faces in all of AEW. Well, he was tonight. And they wanted to see him win this match in the worst way. He had the match won. Sammy, though, recovered. And he did a springboard leap off the rope, landed on the ladder like Spider-Man. And they're throwing shots at each other. Sky, though, got the better of it, shoved them off the ladder again, and that was finally enough for Scorpio Sky to pull down the TNT title. Big pot for the finish. Scorpio Sky begins his second reign now. I certainly, for his sake, hope it goes better than his first reign as TNT champion. Frankie Kazarian climbed into the ring. Remember the segment from, I think it was last week or a couple of weeks ago? The two of them, former partners, former friends, and Kaz was going to challenge Sammy for the title, and Scorpio Sky said, do me a favor. Let me get my rematch first, and I promise you, when I win the title, you'll get the first shot. So here comes Frankie Kazarian. He climbs into the ring. They shake hands. So obviously, we're going to be getting that match soon. The one scary, unnecessary spot aside, this got pretty exciting, I thought, in the final few minutes, and it ended up being a very fun match. But boy, that Phoenix Splash, when I first saw him land, it did not look good. And that doesn't mean he didn't get his bell rung or that he didn't actually get concussed. We don't know. But that did not look good. That could have gone so badly. I mean, it's amazing to think that it's a game of inches. I mean, it's not funny, but like you think about this sometimes, the way some of these guys land. And some of them walk away without a scratch, and then others take a simple suplex and they never walk again. I mean, it's why they say, you know, it's not, I think it's unfair to say it's not ballet. I used to say that, and then I would hear from people, have you ever tried ballet? It's very dangerous. I said, okay, I'm sure it is. I didn't see Black Swan. But it's a dangerous game. Now, he's very lucky that he was able to make it out in one piece. But, you know, Scorpio Sky had a very forgettable first run. In fact, I called it the worst TNT title reign in AEW history. It was Scorpio Sky's first run with that championship. It was awful. It was horrendous. But now it sets him up for a second run that hopefully, for his sake, goes a lot better than the first. And it makes me wonder, you know, I understand why he got a babyface reaction tonight, because people just don't like Sammy and Ty all of a sudden. And it's Philadelphia, and, you know, so tonight he got a babyface pop. Next week, whatever city they're in, he may get booed. We'll have to wait and see. But it does make me wonder if maybe Scorpio Sky is going to end up going babyface. Maybe you take him babyface. Dan Lambert kicks him out of the group. You know, whatever they're going to do with Kazarian, but then we end up eventually getting Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page for the TNT title. I would love to see Ethan Page get a run with the TNT championship. You know, I've liked what I've seen from Ethan Page on promos. You know, his matches are fine, but like, you talk about intensity with Eddie Kingston. Some of the recent promos that we've seen from Ethan Page, you know, he's got a fire in his delivery and an intensity about him where, yeah, he makes you sit up and notice. And I think that he's somebody who could also have a run with that title and get a nice, you know, a nice little push in AEW at some point. So maybe the end game here is for Scorpio to go babyface, and maybe ultimately Ethan Page is the one who takes the TNT title away from him. It's just something to consider. this Friday night on Rampage, which is being taped or was being taped tonight. We got Darby Allin one-on-one with Swerve Strickland in an Owen Hart qualifier. That should be a hell of a match. We're going to get a face-to-face confrontation with Hook and Danhausen. So that story is going to continue. Jade Cargill, Red Velvet, and Kiera Hogan against Willow Nightingale, Trish Adora, and Sky Blue. Keith Lee one-on-one with Colton Gunn. And Samoa Joe defends the Ring of Honor television title against former Ring of Honor star Trent Beretta. I think they would be better off cutting one of those matches. Last week on Rampage, it was so rushed. It's my biggest pet peeve with Rampage. That show is edited to shit. Oh my God, the editing on that show. No time for entrances, right? We know that. But just the editing and the pacing and everything, that show would benefit by just cutting one of those segments and leaving the others. So I think it'll end up being another rush job on Friday. But next Wednesday on Dynamite, we've got, how about this? And again, they just kind of threw it out there. It was like, next week on Dynamite, by the way, and they threw it out there. Deonna Purrazzo. Or as Tony Schiavone called her, I should say it the way that he did. He referred to her as Purrazzo. It's Deonna Purrazzo making her Dynamite debut next week. She is the Ring of Honor Women's Champion. She's going to be going one-on-one against the interim Ring of Honor Women's Champion, who won the title at the recent Supercard of Honor show. Mercedes Martinez, champion against champion, title for title, to decide the one singular, unified, undisputed Ring of Honor Women's Champion. That will be taking place on Dynamite next week. Would be nice if we had some kind of a video or something on the show that they could have dropped from Purrazzo, but again, this was just thrown out there. I would hope they have something on Rampage from her or about her. Again, I know they think their audience is aware of all this already, but even still, it would be nice to hear from her one time before she goes into this major championship match on television next week. And as far as her status, you know, it's hard to call a winner in that one because she is still under contract to Impact for several more months, I believe. I believe her contract is up later this year. If she isn't coming in full time, and I don't know what her status is with the new Ring of Honor, I can't say that she's going to walk away with the win. In fact, I think the favorite there has to be Mercedes, but there is one other little wrinkle here. And that is the fact that next week we're going to get Wardlow against MJF's mystery opponent. Clearly, it's going to be Big Cass, who is wrestling for Impact as well. So when I mentioned a mini Impact invasion, that's what I meant. Next week, we have two Impact stars who, for the very first time, are going to make their Dynamite debut. I mean, do we expect both Impact stars to go in there and lose? Because I don't see Big Cass beating Wardlow. Possible. It's possible. Only if MJF gets involved. If MJF and Sean Spears get involved, they could fuck Wardlow over and cost him the win. That would give Morrissey the win. I don't see Wardlow losing. I don't think Wardlow should lose until he gets to Double or Nothing. So is Purrazzo and Morrissey both going to go to the opposing show next week and lose? I find that hard to believe. I feel like one of them has to win. The more likely of the two probably is Purrazzo or Purrazzo. Purrazzo. I can't get over that. Purrazzo. Tony, what are you doing? We also have, how about this for a match? Bobby Fish one-on-one with Jeff Hardy in an Owen Hart qualifying match. And that is the current lineup for Dynamite next week. So some interesting matches, just kind of thrown out there like that. But yeah, they've definitely got some big matches on tap for next week. Let's take a look at the poll. And we've got 75% of you give this show tonight a thumbs up. 15% of you give it thumbs in the middle. And 9%, actually almost 10% give Dynamite a thumbs down. Go vote. at Solomonster. You know, it's funny. In the last, I'd say, 36 hours or so, I think I lost like 25 followers. But it was like in one shot. You know, it's been pretty stable and steady. And then all of a sudden, almost 30 followers are gone. I think there is something to people suddenly deactivating their Twitter accounts. I don't think it's just people saying that that's something they're going to do. I think people are already leaving Twitter. Because I've already seen it in my follower account. But anyway, that is the poll. You can go follow me on Twitter. Take their place. Fuck those people. Take their place and go follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. Then you can vote in the poll. And again, before I get to your super chats, quick plug here. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be back with you live in less than 24 hours, 8 p.m. Eastern. If you are a channel member only, it is exclusive for our YouTube channel family. If you are a member, opening up the phone lines. Better call Solomonster. I haven't done one of these in a little while. But we're going to jump back on the phone lines with you guys tomorrow. And you won't have to wait until tomorrow night, noon Eastern. I'm dropping the latest Sound of Gamer, My Rise Episode 4. Solomonster gets demoted to the main roster. This is a very interesting episode. So I hope that you will join. You will check that out. We'll have a good time tomorrow with all the content going up. There's Bobby Lashley. Look at the tongue, look at the tongue, look at the tongue. Bobby Lashley, poor Lashley, stuck in a feud with Omos. Poor Lashley. So let's take a look at your super chats. And I do thank you guys because your super chats support the channel. It's really the most direct, easiest, quickest way for you to support the channel if you would like to do so. Drop a super chat. You get to leave a comment, ask a question. I shall do my best to answer it. And I want to send a shout out to Naif Al-Safar. If Naif is still with us, I know he's in a different time zone, but Naif, thank you for the double super chat. You were the first one to drop some donos here tonight. We've got French Fry Slut. $5 super chat. Serena Deeb gonna get fired for throwing Tony Khan's Coke in Sheeta's face like that. Yes, she did at one. I didn't mention that, but she did at one point throw some powder, and I was wondering exactly what kind of powder it was. Maybe she got into Tony Khan's stash. I mean, look, Big Swole said that she and Tony used to smoke. Maybe Tony hides his stash under the ring. You know, when Serena's not wrestling, she's on headset in the gorilla position, sitting next to Tony. You know, they're like this. So he may have been like, hey, look, you need, you know, keep an eye on my stash there. I don't know if he'll be very happy that she dipped into it. Dick the Cock Johnson. There it is. There's my boy right there. MJF could have given W. Morrissey $100 and it would have been double his usual Impact salary. There you go. From Dick the Cock Johnson. Dry chicken without flavor. That Sheeta and Serena Deeb Philly street fight was boring as hell. It was whack, anticlimactic, and no imagination whatsoever. Well, the crowd certainly couldn't give two shits about it, so I think the crowd in Philly would agree with you based on their reaction. Nick Grosso. The booking of the TNT title is so sus. All this hotshot booking is devaluing the title. Maybe they're just trying to wipe away the memory of Cody Rhodes having all those TNT title runs. So they're trying to give different people as many title reigns as they possibly can to push Cody further and further down the list. Maybe. Dry chicken without flavor. Do you see Impact Wrestling reaching out to AEW for another partnership since Tony owns Ring of Honor? I could see Impact reaching out. I don't see any reason for Tony Khan to reach out right now. Yeah, of course, Impact, it's in their best interest to reach out. If they can get their talent on TNT and TBS, why wouldn't they? Tony Khan doesn't have to reach out to them, but do I see them reaching out to him? Of course. Magician Sapphire, I don't blame Scorpio Sky at all for that botch. I have no problem with Sammy or anyone doing crazy high spots, but for God's sakes, make sure you hit your target. That's the point, man. If you're going to try shit like that, you better make sure you hit your mark. I don't blame Scorpio Sky for that at all. I don't blame him at all for that either. Thank you for the 10 spot, though, Magician Sapphire. I appreciate that. Como Amosto with the $9.99 super chat. No message, just showing some support, I guess. I love it. Dry chicken without flavor. Scorpio Sky's second reign as TNT champion should be better this time. I don't think it could be worse. How could his second reign be worse than his first? Ethan Page should go after either the Ring of Honor television title or the Pure title. I like my idea better. Eventually, there's a falling out. He goes after the TNT title, and maybe he takes the TNT title. You know, the problem is, there's so many people on that roster who could and should really be challenging for that TNT title. Andrade. I mean, we can go up and down the list. I don't know what's going on with Miro. You know, I've been resistant so far to the idea of introducing another title. I still wouldn't. I still think Trios titles are on the way. You know, you've got the Elite guys, you've got Death Triangle, you've got House of Black. I mean, you've got Blackpool Combat Club. Trios titles make all the sense in the world in this company. The FTW title, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. I see the FTW title eventually landing on Hook. And I think once that happens, they should just retire it. I mean, it's a completely useless belt. But, you know, Hook ending up challenging Ricky Starks at some point for the championship. You know, a fracture in Team Taz. Taz's son gets to be the last holder of his father's title, and then it can just quietly be retired. You know, but I understand people thinking that there should be another secondary title. It's not something I would do right now. So, you know, it's just one of those things you have to navigate. And maybe having Ring of Honor as an outlet could alleviate some of those issues. Like, you know, like he said in that super chat, maybe there are other people who could challenge. Like Trent Beretta is challenging for the Ring of Honor TV title on Friday. Wheeler Yuta, he walks around with the Pure title. They're going to have to leverage those Ring of Honor titles in order to give other people something to fight for. I would rather see them do that than start introducing a whole bunch of new singles titles. Spaghetti. We've got Spaghetti. Is Okada's best match ahead of him or behind him? That is a very interesting question. He has had some incredible matches. His best match, he's still young. You know, Okada is still a young guy. He's still barely mid-30s. I think his best match is still ahead of him. I really do. Benno380. It's the Vegemite Delight. Do you personally know much about the Australian wrestling scene? I do not. I get occasional updates from people down there who follow it. That's how I first found out about Buddy Matthews. Years ago, when he first got signed by NXT. I've told that story before. The person who wrote me was so excited. Oh my God, you gotta see this guy. You gotta see him. He's a future main event star, future star in the making. And then when they gave him the name Buddy Matthews, I remember the angry email that I got from him. You know, yelling at me, WWE, some crack addict in the company thought that, you know, some drug addict thought it would be funny to take, you know, the name from the Nutty Professor and merge it with some other name. He was so angry. Outside of those updates, no, I don't know too much about the scene down there. Anti-M Bishop. Solomonster, the show was great. Philly, take a bow. Never disappoint as usual. You know, it's funny because I thought there were parts of the show where the crowd was actually pretty tame. They came alive later in the show, like for the main event. But this was top to bottom all throughout the night. This crowd was not as hot as I would have expected. They had their moments. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury, what is your favorite teammate versus teammate match? I gotta go with Owen against Bulldog in early 97 in the European title tournament. Yeah, I think that might be it. That might be it for me. Shawn and Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold had a pretty damn good match at the King of the Ring in 97. Actually, I think I might like their match there better than their WrestleMania 14 match. But Owen and Bulldog in that European title tournament final, I mean, it, you know, that's a tough match to beat. That's a very tough match to beat. Dev to Dust, buy or sell, which match was worse? Eva Marie against Cameron or Oksana against Rosa Mendez? I don't remember either one of those matches. I think I blocked them out of my mind. Anything with Rosa Mendez, though, is horrendous. So I will go with Rosa Mendez, not even remembering that match. I'm sure it was terrible. The Comedic Genius, you mean you're facing Andrew the Giant on the next My Rise episode. That's right, yes. I stand correct. I am wrestling Andrew the Giant. You are correct. Dry Chicken, I shall now use some of Hook's charm and give you a reserve curse spell on Be the Booker tonight. Yeah, I'm a little worried how this Be the Booker is going to end up. Food Hive. Happy birthday to Food Hive. It is birthday day for the birthday boy. He says, no better way to end it than with some AEW reviews and Sound Off Gamer after this. Well, the Sound Off Gamer is tomorrow. You gotta wait a few more. You gotta wait a little while longer. Because with Solomonster putting the beats on Hogan, does that mean that he ended racism? No, Cody Rhodes ended racism. I just aspire to follow in his footsteps. Johnny Francesi, $5 super chat. I'm the minority, but these shows lately haven't clicked with me. Some good wrestling, but there doesn't feel like there's a hot angle to tune in for. It doesn't help when you don't have your world champion on the show. So that also could be part of the problem. Last week, he made a very brief appearance. This week, he wasn't able to be there. You know, we might start to run into that on Monday Night Raw. Unless they have Roman Reigns going back and forth. I mean, I was all in favor of unifying the titles, but they're going to have to at least have him sharing time between both shows, or else you're going to have the Raw Tag Team titles being featured in main event programs all the time. Hulkling93, I read a Sportster article that suggested the Blackpool Combat Club may be a mistake with Brian and that he should be continuing a run as a top heel. What are your thoughts? No, I think it's actually a pretty fucking badass idea, and I don't know who wrote that article, but they're wrong. So don't read the Sportster. Listen to this guy. I know what I'm talking about. Steven Chappa, $30 Bully the Clown super chat. It's been a bit, but I'm back. Time to send in the clowns for all the bad takes tonight. Steven Chappa sending in the clowns. You love to see it. Steven, thank you. Michael Dunnings, what's up, Solomonster? What's up, Michael? Wanted to congratulate my bro Spencer, massive Sammy and Ty fan, on the third anniversary of his sobriety. Keep it up, Boos. Well, congrats to Michael. Or I should say his brother. Congrats to his bro Spencer. That's very cool to hear. Groovy Goose, $4.99 super chat. That Sammy ladder spot looks scary. Hope he's all right. He's got to stop flying lessons from penguins, though. Love the show. Thank you, Groovy Goose. I thought you were going to say geese, not penguins. Joseph Brooks, $9.99. Hey, Solomonster, I just wanted to ask what you thought about my personal favorite top three favorite matches. Rock against Triple H at Backlash. Jeff Hardy against The Undertaker. John Cena against Brock Lesnar against Seth Rollins. Cena, Lesnar, and Rollins is one of the greatest triple threat matches in WWE history. So I think that's a pretty good pick. Hardy and The Undertaker is really just remembered for the finish. I don't remember the match itself being anything overly special, but it's memorable because of the finish. It's a very memorable finish. The match itself, not one of my favorites. Rock and Triple H at Backlash was not as good as their Judgment Day Iron Man match, but It was a very good match with, I mean, my God, the finish. You want to go hear a sustained 5 minute long pop that just does not let up. From the moment the glass shatters and Austin comes out, mows everybody down with a chair. Here comes Linda McMahon with Earl Hebner, the fired referee. The Rock hits the people's elbow, wins the title. I mean, that was the Attitude Era in a nutshell, that whole finish. Deontay Soignier, $5 super chat. Happy anniversary to my good brother Spencer, my best friend. Screw Sammy. Sammy Aloe Vera, that's for you, buddy, LOL. Screw MJF 2. That's for me. Love you, man. So, were there more than one? That's weird. Did he... Was it the same person sending a shout-out to his brother Spencer under different names? I'm confused. We had Deontay sending the shout-out to Spencer, but then we had Michael Dunnings sending the shout-out to Spencer. And there ain't no way we have two people listening to this podcast right now, unless they are part of the same family, who have a brother named Spencer, who happens to be a fan of Sammy Guevara. So now I am confused. Maybe he's got split personality disorder. Here's my question, though. You know, you're congratulating Spencer, and if Spencer is listening to this or watching this, shout out to Spencer. When Spencer's birthday comes around, do you buy him a gift from Spencer's Gifts? I'm just wondering. Oh, Paul Heyman would be proud. Paul Heyman would be proud of that. The Mount Vernon Kid, the Alpha. Oh my God, that Sammy spot needs to talk to Jeff and see the consequences of these high spots. Okay, so now that clarifies things. Deontay says, Michael is his brother, I'm his best friend. Okay. So now I understand now, because I was starting to freak out a little bit here. James wants to know, is Spencer for hire? Oh my God. Keep him coming. Keep him coming. There's Paul Heyman. Yeah, I'm stealing your gimmick. I do you better than you do yourself. Dried chicken. I'm going with a bold prediction. FTR will dethrone Jurassic Express in May. I don't know. They're teasing Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs is getting the next shot. Really just depends when they do the match. Hulkling, where JR was going with the you can see the Americanization in Sheeta comment. Oh, where was he going with that comment? Made me laugh. I don't know. I don't think JR gives a fuck. I think he said, I didn't even pick up on the comment. You can see the Americanization in Sheeta. Maybe he was referring to her just using the weapons. JR, if you really pay attention, he's always dropping little remarks during matches, especially some of the garbage matches. You could see he's not a big fan of it. And he'll drop little, veiled, passive-aggressive digs in things that he clearly doesn't like. So maybe it had to do with that? I don't know. I don't know what he meant. I don't know, man. Joseph Brooks, let's just say by all means, WWE actually gets to do Rock against Reigns. Would you think that it would be best to go ahead and put The Rock in the Hall of Fame before the match? I don't think it matters. Who cares when they put him in? He's going to go in. It's just a matter of what works for his schedule. If his schedule works next year, they can put him in the Hall of Fame and they could have him wrestle. I don't think it matters whether he goes in before or he goes in after. I don't think it makes a lick of difference. Powerful One with the $9.99. There he is again. Look at this. Bobby Lashley. The Bobby Lashley tongue. I want to know what he's looking at in that image. I have no interest in going back and watching those empty Performance Center shows. What the fuck is he looking at? Powerful One, Hangman should beat Punk. and then MJF should beat Hangman at All Out. Wouldn't it be a bigger rub for MJF if he can say, I did what Punk, Danielson, and Omega couldn't do, beat Hangman for the championship? Yeah, I mean, that could work. That could work. I don't know. I feel like he has to beat Punk directly. I feel like him pinning Punk's shoulders to the mat would be most effective. But I mean, look, if they position it that way, that's not a bad way to position it. Because it's true. Hangman has beaten all of these different people. And then in the end, if he could pull off what they couldn't, yeah, I mean, that could work too. That would be another interesting way of going about it. But I still say he should be Punk. So. Shin Akuma, $5 super chat. What's going on, Shin? Matthew Sun, $8 super chat. Darby is a stunt double. Sammy is a guy who watched Jackass and went, yeah, I think I can handle that. Anyway, if we could leave the TNT title on someone for longer than 6 weeks, that would be great. Let's see, Matthew again. I want beer money breakup vibes from Kaz and Sky, though. EJ Slemp, do you think Ricky Starks would be a good first feud for Hangman if he loses the title? Also, do you think Joe and Starks could be a good tag? Joe and Starks? No, I don't know where you got that from. Ricky Starks would be a good feud, though, with anybody, because Ricky is another one, kind of like Malakai Black. We don't get to see him on TV as often as we probably should. Oz and Glorious, happy birthday, Food Hive. Could we get a Solomonster word of love for Ignacio Varga? Michael Mando, Ignacio Varga. Yes. No spoilers here for Better Call Saul, for anybody who might not have seen it yet, but what an episode this week. Holy shit. Holy shit. I am sad that it's the final season, but I can't wait to see how it all wraps up. I never thought that I would see another show that matched Breaking Bad or exceeded it. I think Better Call Saul might actually be better. We'll see how it ends. To me, nothing is crazier than that final season of Breaking Bad, but there's never been a show that had a prequel built around a bit minor character from a main show where an entire series was created, dedicated to this one character that has been of the kind of quality that Better Call Saul is. And yeah, I heard from a few people who said, well, I started watching it from season one and it was kind of slow. You got to stick with it. I'm telling you, it's a quality show. And you don't have to watch Breaking Bad, but you really should. A lot of it won't make sense, or a lot of it will make sense in a way that makes the show more enjoyable. I would definitely advise you to watch Breaking Bad regardless, but Better Call Saul, I can't say enough good things about it. It really is a fantastic show. Epsilon Sama, biggest swerve, Musk buying Twitter or Vince buying WCW? Well, I don't know. One is official and one is not yet official, so we'll have to wait and see. We have Brock Benningfield. I wonder if Alexander Hammerstone is watching Wardlow and thinking, that could have been me. Well, he signed the contract to stay with MLW, so obviously he must like it there. Yeah, he signed the contract. In fact, he re-signed with them not too long ago. So again, I don't think he has any regrets, or else he would have left. Shin Akuma, dropping the $5 super chat. Was the six-man Hell in a Cell a complete mess, or was it good for what it was? I like going back to watch that match. It's not one of my favorite matches. I wouldn't call it a mess. I think it's an enjoyable match. It's just not one of my favorites. But no, I wouldn't call it a mess. HBKC83, what do you consider the Blackpool Combat Club? Faces, heels, or tweeners? Tweeners. Link Lex 7, only Sheeta can get an H2O chant going. Wait until Captain Insano makes his debut. Amiibo Guru. Did you see Pete Alonso get hit in the head again yesterday? The Mets are on someone's hit list. Also loved FTR's gear tonight. Yeah, I don't know what's been going on lately with the Mets, and there was a bench-clearing brawl I saw in the last... I mean, it's ridiculous. The Mets are going to have to start throwing down. They're going to have to start packing heat, coming to the ballpark. You fuck with them, you're going to get your ass handed to you. I mean, what is going on here? We got to get them in the ring with somebody. People getting hit left and right. Don Juan. Happy anniversary to my good brother Spencer. My best friend. Screw Sammy Allo. Well, that's for you, buddy. Screw MJF. That's for me. LOL. Love you, man. Boy, Spencer's got a lot of friends. Spencer has more friends than I do. Martin Scorsese Stan. $5 super chat. Which Rosa Mendez match would be worse? Nia Jax against Rosa Mendez? Nia Jax against Rosa Mendez is the answer. I don't even need to read the rest. The answer is Nia Jax against Rosa Mendez. Somebody would die in that match. There would be a fatality in that match. Juan Ocampo. $4.99 Super Chat. If anyone disagrees with me, I will call your mom and tell her that I am getting bullied on here like Quantum TV did. I hope you get kicked off YouTube, bro. Thank you, Juan. I see Juan's been drinking again. Meaty Sentai Virginia. Hey, Solid Monster, first time super chatter, just dropping $5 to celebrate good health and to support the show. I salute you as well, my friend. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Meaty. From Virginia. Dry chicken without flavor. I would do a blood and guts match during Halloween week. That would be a good time for it. I agree. That would be a good time for it. Paul Heyman sending in a super chat. If the heels at House of Glory want heat with Solomon, sir, all they got to do is mention the name Arta Ocal and how Solomon, sir. Did I ever tell you that the real story? We'll have to save that for another time. By the way, I don't think it's a coincidence that after I left that website, Michael Cole and JBL's website that they jointly owned, the thing went belly up. That's no surprise. Thank you, Paul Heyman. Not quite as... I think Paul Heyman's a little salty that I took over his gimmick tonight. He doesn't know what to do with himself. I stole his thunder. Well, I think it was Dry Chicken who said that he put some kind of reverse curse on me before to try to change my luck as far as Be the Booker is concerned. Michael Darcy. Dropping $2.99. Shout out to Spencer. That's right. Spencer is the man. I agree. Shout out to Spencer. Spencer, I think, is the biggest. He's the biggest baby face all night. He's a bigger baby face than anybody we saw on Dynamite tonight. Hey, we've got Nier all the way from Israel. Channel member for 4 months. Checking in. 2 more chemo treatments to go. Thank you so much for your incredible support during this period. The chat is family. We are one big dysfunctional family, and Nier, I want to say that I'm very happy that things are going well. I hope they stay that way. I hope you go through these last couple of treatments. No problems, no issues, feeling good, feeling strong. And you put this shit to bed once and for all. I'm pulling for you, buddy. And so is Spencer. You got Spencer on your side. All right. On that note, here we go. I'm almost afraid to even try this week. After the last couple of weeks that we've had, I don't know what to expect. But it is time. It is time. I can't even speak. It is time to be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Oh my goodness. What will the wheel bring us tonight on Be the Booker? Well, let's find out. We shall begin with the men's Be the Booker. We are, of course, for those who don't know what this is about, we are attempting to book a main event caliber match. It could be a pay-per-view main event, it could be a TV main event, but I'm trying to do my best to book a good main event. And we begin with the Viper. Randy Orton. How appropriate. On the very week where Randy Orton is celebrating 20 years in WWE, we land on Randy Orton. I just did a whole segment on Randy Orton. There, look on my screen. It's the Randy Orton dance. Solomonster is doing a dance for Randy Orton. Look at those moves. Solomonster getting into the celebration here. 20 years of Orton. So we're off to a good start. I got a good feeling about this. Randy Orton, one-on-one with Bret the Hitman Hart. Oh my goodness. We hit the jackpot tonight. Bret Hart against Randy Orton. That might have been the best Be the Booker match that I have booked in all the times that I've booked the book. Booked the book? The fuck does that mean? Booked the match. Booked the book. Well, I like that. I like that a lot. I should just end it right here. Because you know it's all downhill from here. You know it's all downhill from here. How would that go? What do you guys think about that? Bret in his prime against Randy Orton, even Randy Orton today, or it depends when you consider Randy Orton's prime, but I think that would be a hell of a match, actually. Let's flip on over to the ladies. I know I'm a glutton for punishment here, but let's give it a shot. We got to do it. We have to try it and see how it goes. Where she stops, nobody knows. I'm very offended. Somebody said I'm a worse booker on the women's matches than Tony Khan. Take great offense to this. We begin with Rowdy Ronda Rousey. Very likely your next SmackDown Women's Champion in a couple of weeks. Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey is going to go one-on-one with who? Who will Ronda Rousey be stepping into the ring with? Ronda Rousey against Mako Satomura. I actually like that match. I think that Mako would bring the best out of Ronda Rousey. I mean, Mako could bring the best out of almost anybody. We have a double winner this week. When was the last time we did that? When was the last time you heard me ring the bell? And not the buzzer for both the men's and the women's match on Be the Booker. We fucking did it, guys. We finally did it. We did it. We had a great week. I finally booked a pair of main events that people actually would want to see. A pair of main events that we could be proud of. Mark the date. We need to remember this day. This may never happen again. That's right, former NXT UK Women's Champion, or the current. I think she's the current, isn't she? NXT UK Women's Champion. I love it. Oh, got that huge weight lifted off my shoulders now. Jared M. dropped a $25 Hardy Monster Super Chat, saying, Better Call Saul on Monday was absolutely gut-wrenching. I can definitely see Big Cass beating Wardlow next week. Well, if Big Cass is going to beat Wardlow, then it's going to be because of interference by MJF. So you may be right, but I don't see both Impact stars losing. One of them has to win. It could be Deonna, but they're not both going to walk in there and lose. I cannot imagine. Unless Impact is so desperate just to get their talent on there that they'll agree to anything. I cannot see both of them losing on the same show. It was Spencer. So I don't even get credit for the Be the Booker this week. I have to give credit to Spencer, who I've never met in my entire life. For all I know, he doesn't even really exist. He's a figment of someone's imagination. And you're giving him credit over me. It's not right. It's not right. I don't know why you people bully me so much. Fawaz, it is my boy Fawaz checking in. All the way from Saudi Arabia. Hey man, how are you? Miss chatting with you, buddy. As scheduled, the Saudi pay-per-view is in October, he says. Have a question about Austin. Do you think it's possible that we could see him there? I really want him. Well, I know you want him on there, but no, I don't see Austin on that show. I don't think Austin would be there if he's not wrestling, and I don't think he's wrestling. I think the perfect ending for him, as he said at WrestleMania, he began his career in Dallas. He ended his career in Dallas. I don't think he's going to have a better match than the one that he had as far as closing the book for good on his career. So, no. I don't see him. I don't see him wrestling on that show. Could always make an appearance. I don't think that's going to happen. Make Spencer a co-host. Hey, maybe Spencer will call in tomorrow night on the call-in show. You never know. You have Solomonster and Spencer having a conversation. Dry Chicken says the spell worked. Your spell worked better than Danhausen's. Shin Akuma with the $5 super chat. I love how you have all the wrestling knowledge. Hearing the insides from my era is great. I eat that stuff up. Happy birthday, Food Hive, and thank you, Solomon. So, well, thank you, Shin. That's very nice of you to say. Spencer should get a Cody level entrance on the call-in show. You'll notice that Cody got pyro on Monday when he came out for Randy Orton's celebration at the beginning of Raw. Even Randy Orton didn't get pyro for his own celebration, but Cody got pyro. Fawaz dropping another super chat because, yeah, it's not easy to get Austin, so I think Goldberg's contract is done, so who is the legend to replace him? John Cena? Keep up the great work. There's always somebody. Who it's going to be in October, I'm not sure. Depends who's available. It's not going to be Austin. It's not going to be Rock. Undertaker could show up, throw a chokeslam, and not wrestle. They paid him enough money, I'm sure he would do it. You'll probably get Brock. You'll probably get Lesnar on the show. A new Halo episode drops tomorrow. No idea when I'll be able to watch that. There is a show, for those of you who are not aware, I only became aware of it the other day. It is an Amazon show, I guess Amazon Prime. It's a Josh Brolin show. It looks like a show, you know, it's kind of like, not a cowboy show, it's not really the right way of putting it, but he's like a cattle rancher in Wyoming. He's got the cowboy hat, he lives on a ranch, but it's a sci-fi show. There is a huge hole that he discovers in the ground, like this huge void in the ground, and it's like, it's just a hole that I guess takes you to a different dimension, time travel. It's weird. I only first learned about it the other day. I've already watched the first two episodes. It's pretty interesting. It's called Outer Range. I believe it's called Outer Range. I hope I have that title right. Anyway, you should look it up. Some of you may enjoy. If you're into sci-fi and that kind of stuff, you might enjoy that show. I saw Josh Brolin's name, and I said, I have to. Yeah, I just think back to Old Country for No. I almost called it Old Country for No Men. That's going to be the sequel. No Country for Old Men. Old Country for No Men. I think it's getting a little late for me. We may have to call it a night. Jared is very excited about the return of Ozark. As am I. But it's not tomorrow. It's out Friday. I thought Friday. I think Friday. Friday it's out. Not tomorrow. Well, actually, it's 12:30 in the morning. So, yes, you are correct. I guess tomorrow is Friday. I don't even know what time it is. All right. Outer Range. Yes, that is the name of the show. Check it out. It gets the Solomonster stamp of approval, although I've only seen the first two episodes. And there's two more. And then I think they're doing two more releases, I think this week and maybe next week. They release two episodes at a time. So I think there's a total of eight in this first season. So I'm not done with the episodes yet, but I've enjoyed it so far. Old Country for No Men, starring Fart. Yes, only some people will get that fart joke. You'll notice no misspellings on the bottom tonight. Dry chicken without flavor. The situation with Brett and Martha is unfortunate. It would have been good for Brett to attend Double or Nothing to watch the Owen Cup in person. Well, he I'm sure was watching Dynamite tonight. He was watching the FTR match very intently. I'm sure he's already sent them a very nice text. Anyway, one last reminder here that I am going to be live again tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, for channel members only. We're going to be doing a call-in show. So now's as good a time as any to become a channel member and support. Support the channel here on YouTube, and everybody will have access to this here at noon Eastern tomorrow. A brand new Sound Off Gamer My Rise Episode 4, Watch Solomonster Get Demoted to Monday Night Raw. Called down from NXT to Raw and already getting fucked. That did not take very long. So I hope you will all tune in for that. We have a $2, one final super chat here. $2 from Spencer. I am real. Tonight's stream was amazing. So Spencer is in the flesh. Spencer is real. And Bearwolf says we only need 40 more likes to hit 300. So get on that. I didn't mention that at all tonight. But thank you for bringing that up. 40 more likes to get us to 300 here before we before I go to bed tonight. All right, I'm going to head out of here. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for all your Super Chat support. I'm going to be back with you live for the SmackDown and Rampage recap on Friday. Two taped shows. Oh, joy. SmackDown is taped this week. So is Rampage, but we'll hang out for a little bit on Friday night. We always have fun together. Shout out to Food Hive. Have a happy birthday. I hope you had a happy birthday. And Spencer the bot. We all know you're a bot. Shout out to Spencer. The real superstar of the evening here. Everybody loves Spencer. All right, I'm out of here. Have a good night. I'll see you guys tomorrow for more content here on the channel. Take care, guys.